I want to talk about exports now with Dan Hallstrom. He is the CEO of the U.S. Meat Export Federation. We're going to talk more about more than just pork exports. I want to get beef in here, too. But, Dan, welcome back to AgriTalk. It's good to talk with you again.
Yeah, likewise. Thank you for the invitation.
Absolutely. Glad that you could make the time for us. Let's focus on pork here to start, Dan. But, boy, I tell you, 2020 got off to a it was like we had a running start on pork exports. And then, of course, we ran into some issues.
Yeah, the first quarter exports really were extremely solid, especially for pork. Record growth actually for both beef and pork. We had some tailwinds to start the year, none bigger than the Japan-U.S. ag agreement, which we saw definite results for both beef and pork into Japan. And, of course, the real story the first quarter for pork is China, where we're up three times compared to a year ago. But that being said, I throw some caution signs out because I think we'll have the April export numbers tomorrow, actually. But our expectations are that the growth rate's going to slow down a bit going into the second quarter.
Yeah. And it's that's all COVID-related, right?
Yeah, I think it's COVID-related on two fronts, actually.
Okay.
Number one is, of course, we had some supply chain challenges with absenteeism at pork plants and beef plants in March and April. That's part of it. Of course, we're seeing those numbers come back, well on the way back to normal now. But the other thing is the COVID impact on demand in specifically right now in Mexico and Central and South America. The Latin American countries are deep into the middle of the eye of the storm of food service and tourism shutdown. So we're going to see that probably impact us in the second quarter with those countries.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and with the jump in pork prices that we saw domestically, Dan, China's actually canceled some pork imports. But don't we expect China to be a positive demand story again in the second half of the year?
I think without a doubt. I mean,
yeah.
And I'm not sure how much pork's actually been canceled. I would imagine some of it's actually been delayed because of the supply disruptions more than canceled. I mean, we don't know for sure. But, yeah, you're exactly right. I think the overall supply and demand dynamics that were going on pre-COVID have not changed. I mean, they've had severe impact to their sow herd in China due to ASF. And when we come through the other side of the tunnel here, that situation really hasn't changed. So I see some increased demand, the second half of the year, without a doubt. One other thing I might add here, though, is it's not all bad. I mean, China is really an important market for us. But if you look vis-a-vis our global competition, the number one exporter into China is Europe. And about two-thirds of their exports go to Europe, whereas in the U.S., only about a third of our exports go there. So I think the fact that we as a country are diversified with our export base makes us a little less prone to some of these variations in demand week to week.
Yeah, good. Oh, hey, I got to go back to the comments that you were making about Mexico, Central America, some of the vacation destinations. In those areas where the food service demand has obviously fallen off a cliff, what it is... You know, in the U.S., we did such a nice job of transitioning out the demand for a lot of product away from restaurant and food service to retail, grocery, in-home cooking. Is there any evidence that that happened in some of these vacation destinations as well?
Yes, I think we're seeing it already down in Mexico and even into Central America as well. Places like Guatemala and Panama that are very dependent upon tourism as well. Now, the infrastructure is probably not as efficient as we are here, and especially if you compare it to U.S. and to Asia. So their ability to turn it around is probably a little more limited. But the trend lines are there. We're seeing online platforms just boom down there, both for retail and food service, for at-home delivery, for commonplace delivery, You know, the anything that can minimize person-to-person contact, and these e-commerce platforms are perfect for that. So this is a trend we've seen globally all through Asia, and we're seeing it down in Mexico and Latin America as well.
Okay. All right. Dan, talk about some of the cuts, some of the products that come off of pork and beef that maybe we don't see in our meat cases. I'm talking about those variety meats that are very popular in some of our export destinations. How important are they to, how much value do they provide to a carcass for beef and for pork?
Well, yeah, that's a good point. The key to maximizing value, in my opinion, is you got to maximize the value of the carcass. And, you know, we have a lot of demand in the U.S. for middle meats, for example, on the beef side, or for pork loins on the pork side. We have a lot of demand for ground beef in the U.S. These are not necessarily high-demand items globally. There is some demand in some markets for these products, but a lot of the demand is the other cuts, and variety meats are definitely one of them. You look at places like Peru and a huge destination for beef tripe, down to Mexico, beef lips and tripe are very big there as well. China and Mexico are huge destinations for pork feet, pork stomachs, pork tongues, things like this. So it's really about putting the right cut into the right market to maximize value. And that's what you're seeing the packers and the exporters do every day. On a cut side, too, you look at things like short plates. Short plates would be devalued considerably if you were to put them into grinds here in the U.S. You can send them over to Japan, and it's the number one item in Japan is a beef short plate. So, and we're adding a lot of value to that. So this is the beauty of complementing the domestic and international demand to maximize the value of the carcass.
Yeah. All right. And every time we add on to the value with one of those variety cuts, it helps us out. Dan, back to China and the dealings with Hong Kong. Hong Kong had become a heck of a good beef importing destination, wasn't it?
Yes, it has been. But over the years, the last few years, on both beef and pork, we've seen a shift more away from Hong Kong and more directly into China. And there's still business that goes directly into Hong Kong and stays there, and that business is doing well. But the business that was transloading into China is now going direct. So I think the trend lines here are that what we're seeing in Hong Kong is a concern on many levels, without a doubt. But once again, the overall demand by far has been directly into China.
Yeah, okay. So do you think that this, how big of a impact is the situation between China and Hong Kong? Could that derail a lot of the progress that we've made?
Well, that's the question. It could. I mean, you got to be honest, it could. But I'm hopeful it's not going to. I mean, I think this China-U.S. phase one trade agreement is wonderful for agriculture, not only beef and pork, but soybeans, corn, other items as well. And it's not, of course, we all read about the volume commitments over the next 2 years, which are large. But I would argue that some of the other advancements we've made through this phase one agreement, such as market access on product mix, plant registrations, eliminating some of these non-tariff trade barriers was almost as big as the volume commitment. So we're very optimistic this will stay intact and it'll benefit all of us in the long term.
All right, good stuff. Hey, Dan, I just got a message from Scott. He says a big thank you from Iowa Pork and Iowa Beef for all that you do at USMEF. Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much.